Welcome to F8, The Photographer's Perspective. This week, I interview Charlotte Gibb, and we talk about intimate landscapes and Yosemite National Park. I've been fortunate to work alongside some of the world's most inspiring photographers. I've watched how they've helped others at our conferences and transformed the way they see through the lens. Welcome, I'm your host, Chris Smith, founder of Out of Chicago. This is F8, The Photographer's Perspective, the show where we have candid conversations and go in-depth with the pros to get to know them better. Join us each week as we discuss photography, get to know their personal perspectives, and introduce you to new places and experiences, helping you get the most out of your creative passion. All right, I am here with Charlotte Gibb, and we're going to be talking about intimate landscape photography and all sorts of other things. So welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Yay, thank you. How's it going, Chris?
Things are great. Things are really, really good. I am so excited that you're going to be teaching with us at the Out of Yosemite conference in February.
Well, that makes two of us.
Right. And I'm just so excited that you said yes to do it. So, I mean, we already, we have such an amazing lineup, and to have you as part of that is going to be really special. And you live right near Yosemite, correct?
Yeah, I live about 3.5 hours from Yosemite, so I get up there a fair amount, yes.
Is it your favorite place to shoot or up there?
Absolutely.
What would you say?
Well, it's more than my favorite place to shoot. It's my favorite place to be. And if I could figure out a way to live there, I would do it. I'm already kind of scheming on a way to get me a little bit closer than the Bay Area. But yeah, it's a pretty phenomenal place. You're going to love it. You've been there before, right?
Yeah. I mean, we went, I was like there in high school, but we just went back in April or May, and Michael Fry and his wife Claudia showed us all around the park, and we were doing videos with them, and it was an amazing experience for us to be able to do that. So,
well, you got the grand tour then, because those two know everything about there is to know about Yosemite.
And not only that, but everybody knew them. People were coming up going, oh, are you Michael Fry? Can you I've got your book. I've been shooting all your locations. Can you autograph my book? It's in the back of my car. But the crazy part for me was that everybody knew Claudia because she was the manager of the Ansel Adams Gallery so long. And so everybody knew who she was everywhere we went. And she introduced us to all the people at the, I feel like I'm just having a conversation with you still and we're recording the podcast, but that's all right. Everyone's got to listen anyway. but she introduced us to all the people at the gallery, including one of the people you mentioned in the podcast with Matt Payne when you were on with
Adam
him. Evan Russell, exactly. So we met him. He was great. And he's got some amazing black and white photos. But this podcast is supposed to be about you. So I'm really sorry, Charlotte. Let's do that.
Can we just talk about other people? Because these are all phenomenal individuals. And by the way, the lineup you guys have put together for the Out of Yosemite conference is stellar. I mean, really, really impressive. And I'm just truly humbled to be counted among them. So very, very excited to be part of this group. And I'm wondering how I'm going to get to sit in on some of these, you know, classes, but I guess that's not going to be. I'm going to have to teach some, right?
You'll get to sit in some for sure. Yeah. We'll make it happen. Yeah. I was watching a video that you did with Luminous Landscape.
Right.
Yeah. Nick Taylor, is that his name?
That's who did. Yeah. That's the filmmaker who did it.
Yeah. It was a really, really cool, just like 10-minute video all about you photographing in Yosemite and that. But the part that really kind of, well, there were a couple of parts, but the one that really caught my attention was how you were saying, you know, how do you come to a place like this that's already been photographed by like Ansel Adams and some of the other people like Michael Fry and Alan Ross and William Neal. And I'm going, wait, those are all instructors at our thing. Well, not Ansel Adams, but all those other guys are instructors at the event. And so, so I was like, wow, I guess we got the right people here. Right?
Yeah, that's right. It's funny. I mentioned those people before I knew that about the Out of Yosemite conference that I was going to be teaching alongside my heroes. You know, these were people I really look up to. And Colleen is going to be amazing. She's another one of the people that has helped me along my path. And, you know, we all kind of push each other along.
Yeah, it's, Kali Minnick really is one of my favorite people. She was our keynote speaker when we did Acadia, because she wrote The Photographer's Guide to Acadia, but we've hung out a few other times, and she's just so much fun and such a great photographer. So yeah, a really stellar lineup. And it was Michael Fry that said, well, you got to have Charlotte Gibb. And I was like, well, I don't know if she would really do it or not. But yes, you said yes, and here you are. So so that's going to be a really, really cool event. Let's talk a little bit about Yosemite. Like, what are some of your favorite places to shoot in Yosemite? Or maybe actually, I'm going to ask you that, but let's talk about your style of photography, because you might, like you talked about ahead of time, you might like going to Tunnel View, like the iconic place, but you don't shoot Tunnel View the same way that most other people would go and photograph Tunnel View. Tell us about your style of photography.
Well, I would shoot it like other people, and I have.
But that's not what you're known for.
Yeah, and what I'm known for and what I like to do is what's called intimate landscapes, and that's not my word. That's a word that was coined pretty much by Elliot Porter. And if you don't know who he is, he's kind of the father of this style of photography. What it is it's basically picking out smaller scenes in a very large landscape and creating compositions from those smaller scenes. So that's what I do in Yosemite. It's been photographed so many times by so many great photographers, but when you get into this style of photography, it becomes really easy to find original compositions that maybe nobody has done before. So that's what I do. I go there because I love being there first and foremost. And, it's really easy to get away from the crowds if you want to. You can get up there at Tunnel View elbow to elbow with other photographers. And that's kind of fun actually, cause you get to chat with people and, you're all experiencing the same incredible view, which never gets old, by the way. But, if you don't have to do that, it's really easy just to walk off onto a trail and you have the place to yourself. Even though it may be very, very crowded in the valley, you can always find solitude there. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, I love the way you say that, because so many people have said, I wouldn't be interested in doing an event in Yosemite because it's just so crowded and all that. But we're going in February. And like you say, there's places you can get off the beaten path. And it's going with photographers like you that kind of know some of those places to go. Not necessarily like at the end of the secret path or whatever, you get to this amazing thing. But just so you're not walking down the same trail that other people are or whatever. So
Exactly. And, the time of year that we're going to be doing the Outer Yosemite Conference is going to be right before the big famous Firefall event. But it'll be a little bit before that. So I don't expect it's going to be crowded. But the thing is, even if there are a lot of people there to photograph the Firefall, they're all down there doing that. And that pretty much leaves the rest of the valley completely free of photographers and tourists.
Interesting. Yeah, because we tried to avoid it on purpose, but maybe it would have worked out fine anyway. But I've just heard of like traffic jams and all that I just don't want to be any part of.
No, you were wise to do it at a different time. Last year, it was kind of crazy.
Yeah. You go and get one really, really cool picture, maybe. But I feel like that's not like our style of photography. It's definitely not your style of photography to go somewhere and just look for the one iconic shot.
Sure. And there's lots and lots of, good reasons to go to places for those iconic shots. But what I'm going to be teaching is showing people how to find these smaller, more interesting compositions. And one of the things that I tell people to do right away is if you have a lens that's a little bit longer, try working with that. I met a photographer this weekend. She was a portrait photographer, and she was visiting one of my exhibits that I had going on over the weekend. And she was shocked to hear that my go-to lens is my Canon 70-200. She says, "You're doing landscapes with a 70-200, because right. That's, yeah." And I said, "Yeah, I mean, that's my very, very favorite lens. It's not to say I don't pop on a wide angle once in a while, but that's a fantastic lens for this style of photography. But if you're not used to doing, working with a telephoto lens in a landscape kind of application, what I recommend is go ahead and put the wide angle, like a 24-105 on there. And then magnify your live view on the back of the screen, magnify so that you're looking at a piece of what your camera sees, and then just start kind of poking around. Move your cursor around and see what kind of compositions strike you. That's a really, really good technique for finding small compositions, because in this, also in this style of photography, composition is king. It's subject is important, sure, and dramatic light, yeah, we love interesting light, but composition is where you hang your hat at the end of the day with the style of photography. So I can't emphasize that enough. And so I'll be teaching a lot about composition as part of this.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is, yeah, you have, not only do you have a 70 to 200, but you have a 70 to 200 2.8. It's like really big. Why do you have a 70 to 200 2.8? Do you shoot at 2.8?
I do not shoot at 2.8. But you know, I do other kinds of photography besides landscape. And like, for example, I'll take photographs of bands for in low light situations, and gosh, that's a great
lens.
Then
it's the perfect lens, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're right. It's a lot of glass to haul around, but you know what? I'm a big, strong girl, so it's not a problem.
Good for you. I was not big and strong. I remember photographing like architecture downtown Chicago, and I kept carrying around the 70 to 200 2.8 because I was like, you know, I had it for other things, like you're saying, like portraits or whatever, but I'm going, I've never shot this downtown at 2.8. So I ended up getting like the 70 to 300 Canon that, I don't know, 5.6 maybe at the longest, but that was great for that. But so that's why I wanted to ask you about it. That was more like my chance at a personal question for you.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind also with a lot of lenses is that they're sharpest a little bit above their most wide open setting. So at F2.8, it's not like you're going to be shooting at f2.8. You might be shooting at f5.6, and that might be the sharpest point of that particular lens. But you know, every lens has its, you know, has to be tested so that you know where it is sharpest. But I'm not like a really big sharpness freak. You know, I don't mind if things are a little bit soft, actually. So anyway, that lens has a quality to it that I really like. And actually, I dropped that lens one time.
What?
Badly. Yeah. In fact, I just finished writing an article on tripods because the tripod was the cause of the ruin of my lens and my camera, because I was kind of an idiot and had a tripod that was way too small for me. And I set it up improperly and it tipped over with my brand new 70 to 200 lens on the front of it. And, Canon fixed it and they sent it back to me. And I don't know, but that lens has always had this special kind of atmospheric quality that I can't get with any other lens. And I don't know if it's because I dropped it or what, but I don't want, if it's not right, I don't want to fix it. So I don't go there.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. I dropped my Canon 17 millimeter tilt shift and it had definitely an atmospheric effect, but it wasn't good. Wasn't a good thing. I really love this idea that you're saying about zooming in as you're taking the photo. Like, I've done this the exact wrong way, which is that I'll take this wide angle photo, and then when I'm on my computer, I'll zoom in and I'll be like, man, if I had just shot that small part of it, now that's actually a really cool picture, just like 10% of the whole picture. But you can actually do it properly the way you're saying to that's what you're saying, right? Is like in live view, like you're in live view, you magnify in and just kind of trace around the scene and go, okay, that looks cool, that looks good, right?
Yes, exactly. And it's really a good way to start training your eye for spotting them. And after you've done that for a while, you don't have to even bother with that technique. Your eye will just start zooming in on what's interesting. You know, someone told me one time that I see in telephoto, and I think that's true. I mean, I can look at a landscape and I just start zeroing in on the most interesting, you know, thing, you know, pretty easily. And I mean, I think part of that is that I just come from a really, really strong compositional background in graphic design, because that's what we were trained to do, is really, really study composition to the point where I don't even think about it much anymore. You know, I just know when a composition works, when it's balanced, when it's, you know, when the eye is moving through it properly. These are things that I don't even really necessarily think about. In fact, I'm trying to write a article right now on color and how you can use color in landscape photography to get a better understanding and to get a better result. See, I can't even talk about it. It's really hard to write about these things.
It is. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
So, but these are things that I do really, really instinctively. And I was taught in art school so many years ago that now when I'm using those skills, I'm not even consciously thinking about it that much. So it's a very interesting exercise to kind of go through and write about these techniques that I use. It's one thing to write an article about how to set up a tripod, which is very, you know, technical.
It's or like, what don't you think about the latest camera. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, right. Sorry.
Don't make my mistake. But it's quite another to talk about something like color, which can be very, very subjective. And so it's hard to teach that, really. But I'm going to try.
No. I mean, the fact that you've got this background from art school and then you had your own graphic design agency for so long, I mean, it makes it just come second nature. But those are the things that people want to learn. Like, are there a couple of rules that you can give people to help them? I know that you're looking for balance in your images. How about talking about odd numbers, even numbers? What are some things that people might, you know, be able to think about? And it's not just, you know, may not, if it doesn't come natural to them.
Sure. Well, you mentioned odd numbers and even numbers, and that's that's definitely a way to get the eye to move through the composition. So for example, you know, what you're referring to is like odd numbers tend to create a sense of interest because your eye doesn't know where to settle. It's not like you're looking at even numbers. So if you have something that's very centered or even, it can be very restful and resting. But it might not have a very dynamic feel to it in terms of composition. But if you have, say, three elements or five elements, it forces the eye to move through the composition because it can't settle on one thing. So it creates a more dynamic feel in the composition. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. Yeah. I mean, you might get like four things, two and two, and your mind is kind of like, all right, well, that's it. I get it. But when you get them in those odds and they're kind of moving through, your eye just, like you said, doesn't settle. It makes sense to me.
Yeah. And somehow we find it pleasing. You know, it's, we like things that make us think. Our eyes and our brains, we love to be able to look at things that puzzle us a little bit. And that's the other thing I look for in landscapes is I look for things that kind of confuse the eye sometimes. Those are the kinds of compositions I love. Like I have one called Portal where it's the reflections of a monument in these puddles and you're not really sure what you're looking at first. And I have a couple things like that I've photographed that I love. And it's a way of just training your eye to see things a little bit differently.
Right. There was one shot of yours. I don't know the name, but it had like, you could see the tall trees, you could see leaves, but then they were like ripples. And you're like, how could there be ripples? I don't even know how to explain that to you. You're probably like, I have no idea what he's talking about.
I know which one you mean. Yeah, it's pines reflected in the Merced River. And that was taken a few years ago when California was in the, you know, the grip of a terrible drought. So the Merced River was down to a trickle, which meant that the water was low and you could see the rocks underneath it. And the pine trees were reflected in it. So you could see both the pine trees and the rocks. And so I popped on a polarizing filter. And if you half polarize your filter, you can get both the reflections and a little bit of what's going on underneath the surface of the water. And so you get this really disorienting effect with the image. So I love that one.
Yeah.
Too,
but you look at it and you go, reason. Oh, that's cool. Wait, what is it? Oh, wait, no. And it just makes you stay with the photo. I love it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So one time I was with Claudia and Michael, you know, we were just bebopping around the valley looking for something interesting. And I couldn't find anything. And Michael was somewhere doing something, I'm sure, way more interesting than what I was doing. And I was about to kind of give up. And I kind of wandered off, you know, up to the bathroom or whatever. And I was coming back and I noticed this part in the river, there were these really cool rainbows being caused by the ripples. And I sat there and went, wow, that's really trippy. And so I got out my long lens and I started, you know, photographing these things. And then Claudia came along and she goes, what are you doing? And I said, look at this, you know, look at these colors. So Claudia gets out her iPhone and starts doing really cool slow-mo video of this stuff. And so we're doing this for a while. And then Michael comes along and says, well, what are you guys doing? And I said, well, look at this. And so he gets out his camera. So there's the three of us kind of, you know, with cameras pointed down at the river. And pretty soon the tourists are coming along going, what are you guys doing? Is there a fish? Is there a bear? What is down there that's so fascinating?
That's so funny. I mean, that happens to us in Chicago all the time, but it's usually like, you know, we're pointed up at the buildings and they're like, is there someone going to jump? Or like, no, we're just photographing the architecture, you know? So, or is there someone famous coming? Because there's 10 people lined up with cameras. Yeah. My favorite story with that one was when we said, no, we're just photographing the architecture. And the guy behind us goes, no, what are you talking about? There's Derek Jeter right there from the Yankees. And he was getting into a cab, and it really was. But
That's so funny.
But of course, we were on like, you know, 20-second long exposures on tripods, and no one got a picture of him before he waved at us and got in a cab and drove away. But
yeah, you never have the right lens on the camera at the right moment. It happens all the time. You know, some incredible wildlife thing comes in front of your camera, and you've got like the wide angle, and you're shooting, you know, 20-second exposures or whatever. So
I would have never expected, though, that you guys have the same thing where it's like, what's down there? A fish? A bear? Like, no. Do you see the patterns, the rainbows? Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Wait. So I'm going to call you out on something I disagree with you on, although you're probably right. I heard you say somewhere else that you always do your best work when you're shooting alone. But I have these experiences like you're talking about right now where someone sees something in a way that no one else has seen. And I feel like I've had so many of those experiences shooting with my friends or just shooting with other photographers that I really enjoy shooting with a group. In the end, I want to shoot on my own too. But you said that you get your best photos when you're all by yourself, yes?
Well, if I'm really honest with myself, yeah. You know, when I go and look at it.
Don't lie to us.
Not always. I mean, there's like Sentinels was one of those images where I was tagging along, you know, with a group, and I, you know, wasn't supposed to be with them, but they said, hey, come along. It's like, well, okay. And it was a gas. And I have so much fun being with other people because I'm a fairly, you know, social person. It's not like I'm a total introvert or anything. I'm a little bit introverted, definitely, but I like being around other people and it's always more fun. But I think that to do this style of photography, it really requires that you slow down. And the story I just told you about the little rainbows at the bottom of the river, that photo turned out pretty nice. I like it. And it was because I was completely bored. I mean, I had left Claudia and Michael doing their thing. And I was like feeling like, I'm just not seeing anything here. Nothing is really grabbing me. And I'm just, you know, it was midday by then. It wasn't even like, there was no dramatic light. So, but when you're by yourself, you just have to slow down and it gives you the chance to really notice things. But when you're with other people, it's not to say that the group thing can work because sometimes someone sees something and said, hey, look at that. Isn't that interesting? And that can be very, very helpful for sure. That's as honest as I can get, Chris.
Thank you for not lying to us. I really appreciate it. Yes. And opening up. Yeah. No, I get it. You're right. I'm wrong. But there's something that you get to shooting in a group that you don't have when you're shooting
Absolutely.
By yourself.
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay. We can agree on that. So let's talk about, I think we started to say it and then went away from it. Like, what are your favorite places if you want to take some time and spend a few hours? What are some of your favorite places in Yosemite that you want to go to? Is it the meadows? Is it certain hikes? Is it along the river? What really speaks to you?
I can't play favorites here. There's so many, you know, places that I love. I like any place where I can just kind of wander. Along the Merced River, there's lots of trails that go along the river that you can follow. Those usually create interesting work. There's not a lot of people who go off the beaten path and go into those areas. So you can have the place to yourself and start noticing things. So along the rivers, I guess I would have to say is my favorite. I love photographing water. And from the river, you can either look down at the river or you can look up at all the beautiful cliffs around you. So you have a really good view. The other place I really have been getting into lately is the Mariposa Grove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It had been closed for some years. And so I was deprived of these beautiful trees for several years as they were trying to get the renovation of that particular landmark taken care of. And they did a beautiful job. I believe Yosemite Conservancy was responsible for that project. They got rid of a lot of asphalt and put in raised sidewalks so that the roots of the redwoods now can get water.
Yeah, it's like a boardwalk through there, kind of, right?
Yeah, and and it's an enormous place, and you can go up really high and not run into any other people, because people tend to stay down near the tour buses and just go in the lower grove. But the upper grove, which is a bit of a hike, is gorgeous. And I'm still kind of working on photographing that. I don't really feel like I've done anything breathtaking in that grove yet, but that's my new favorite place to kind of explore and check out, precisely because I haven't had a chance to thoroughly experience and thoroughly explore it. Still doing that.
What do you think your great shots there are going to be? I'm going to say some other things so you can think about it. Like when we were there, I remember just photographing some of the bark, like up really, really close. And there were some of the trunks that had fallen and were burned. And I was photographing those patterns. That was really interesting. What do you think that your great shots there are going to be? What's in your mind?
Oh my gosh. Well, you never know what's going to come out of it. And I think I typically go into these types of experiences just to see what I feel and see what catches my attention, to see what the day is bringing. I did a shot there right after they opened. I wanted to do a night shot of the grizzly giant. So I brought my husband up there with me because I'm totally afraid of the dark. And we hiked up there. And you know, we waited till the last tour bus left, because the only way in and out of there is you have to take the bus, and it's a couple of miles to get to the base, to the lower grove, and you have to take the bus. Now, there's nothing preventing you from walking out. So that's what we did. We took the bus up, and then we hiked up the 5 miles or whatever, and then, kind of enjoyed the upper grove. And then we hiked down once it got dark. So that by the time we got to the grizzly giant, it was pitch black, and there was not a soul up there. And I was hearing like every single little noise. And, you know, my husband is sitting there eating crackers and cheese. And I'm like, stop it. You're going to attract bears.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I ended up I got an okay shot, but I think I would have gotten a better shot if I had not been so, you know, jumpy about all the sounds. But I love being out at night. It's really cool. So I got the grizzly giant with the Milky Way above, and I'm going to go back and try to do that again, maybe bring a couple more people with me so that I'm not so jumpy.
Yeah. Now that Mariposa Grove, that, I don't want to say it's closed, but it's not a place we'll go in the winter, I think, right? I think you got to like snowshoe in if you want to do it in the winter. Does that sound right?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. If there's snow up there, you won't be able to get in.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's at a higher elevation. So yeah, there's usually snow.
Exactly. But there's other places that we could shoot night stuff, right? Just in the valley. Yeah. Because that's something people have been asking. Will we be able to go shoot some night stuff? And what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't see why not. I haven't checked to see what the night sky is going to look like when we're there.
I think we're pretty close to a full moon. So I don't think it'd be Milky Way stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, and in the winter we don't have Milky Way anyway.
Right, yeah. You
know, really, but moonlit stuff can be really pretty. And one thing that Michael Fry talked about that really resonated with me is if you are photographing at night, why not treat the moon like it's the sun? Because the camera doesn't really see the difference. It's just a light source like the sun. So, for example, putting the moon behind a tree and getting a starburst effect, for example, it'll do the same thing as it does, you know, as the sun does, only it's at night. Michael's gotten some phenomenal shots with just changing his attitude a little bit about how he considers the moon. It's a light source, just like the sun. So if it's low in the sky, you're going to get deeper shadows, right? Just mm-hmm. like you would with the sun.
Yeah. Yeah. So like one of the people joining us is Tim Cooper, and he's part of the National Parks at Night crew. So I'm sure he'll be taking people out at night too. But yeah, I think it'd be really fun to do some moonlit landscapes. So for sure. So I still don't think you've said it. Like you said the Mariposa Grove. How about in the valley, places we'll be for our event? What are a couple of your favorite places to hit there?
Well, I don't have favorite places.
You said that.
Per se, but you know what? We're going to be there in February, and if we are lucky, we'll get some fresh snow, because there's nothing more special than fresh snow in Yosemite Valley. It is beautiful. And if it snows, then every place in Yosemite Valley is my favorite place. And there's this thing we call FOMS, fear of missing something. And so
yes. And or FOMO, I've heard. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So everybody's kind of running around trying to figure out where to be. So my favorite place in the Yosemite Valley depends very much on the conditions of what's going on in the valley. So when I arrive there, I usually kind of take an inventory, a visual inventory. It's like, well, what's this all about right now, this month? Like, for example, if I go there in the spring, it's all about the waterfalls. It's all about the dogwoods if they're blooming. So that's what's happening in the valley. If I go there in autumn, like this time of year, it's all about the fall color and the quietness of the valley and the stillness of the river. And so you try to capture the essence of what's happening in any particular season. So in February, when we're going to be there, what's really nice about winter, and it's actually my favorite season to be in Yosemite Valley, because as I said earlier, generally you have fewer people visiting. We're going to be ahead of the firefall crowd. So it should be pretty quiet there. But you have really low, the sun is very low on the horizon. So the angle of light is especially lovely in Yosemite Valley in February. We call it winter light, and it's just a quieter, more like the light hits the valley walls, and in some places it never gets light in some parts of the valley, but it gets bounce light. So because the light hits the cliffs and then it bounces down into the shadows, and you get this really nice quality of light. So everywhere in Yosemite Valley is special. It's because the light is special.
One of the best things I heard was watching that video on luminous landscape. And this is like my new favorite quote from any photographer. And I can't remember it. I should have written it down, and I will write it down. But so, like, paraphrasing how you said, when you start looking at focusing in on the smaller details, it starts to give you infinite possibilities of what you can shoot. And I feel like Yosemite is like the perfect place for that. Or maybe even that was part of your quote, is what you said.
Yeah, I think I did say something like that, and that's the truth. It's like it's that as an artist, you have to take inventory on what you have visually in your tool chest. And in Yosemite, if you look at Yosemite with a wide angle lens, you know, there's only so many, you know, wide angle shots you're going to get that are going to be unique. But as soon as you start getting close, you know, you get this infinite palette that you have to work with. You know, do you know what the Mandelbrot set is? I'm not even sure I'll be able to explain it, but basically it's a mathematical formula that creates these really interesting visual patterns. And then as you start zeroing in on the edge, it becomes more infinite. Like you can just go deeper and deeper and see more detail. And it creates
like a fractal type of a thing.
It's fractals. Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
So Yosemite is like that. The closer you go in, the more infinite the possibilities there are to get something that's truly unique. And, you know, I figure, what am I going to say about Yosemite that hasn't been said already 100 times before? I mean, who am I to go in there and try to say something different that's better than, say, Ansel Adams? I mean, so I try to just experience it as best I can and try to share what my tiny little brain can manage to, you know, convey that I think is really special. And we're all uniquely that way. We all are going to find things that catch our eyes differently. And that's the beauty of shooting in a place like Yosemite.
Yeah, when I first started thinking maybe we should try doing an event in Yosemite, I was like, all right, it's iconic. I get it. Like, lots of people love it. And I'm like, it's just not going to work for our stuff. But the first thing that made me think, okay, this might work, was reading Michael Frye's book and realizing all of these places are within, in the valley at least, are within like 10, 15 minutes of each other. I'm like, oh, that's okay. This is what we need for an event like this, where we want to teach classes and go out and help people and then come back and do more and go over images and everything like that. And so that was why I wanted to go out there. But the more I've learned about it and the more I've seen it through like your eyes and William Neal and all these other people, the more I'm realizing this is like a photographer's playground for people that do these intimate landscapes. And I never thought about that from the beginning. I just thought we're going to shoot from tunnel view, get the iconic shots and half dome, whatever. But it really seems like it's going to be the perfect place for that type of photography. And I didn't realize that. I mean, do you see it that way? Or do you think that you could go to a different park and do all the same things?
Oh my gosh. You know, I personally, it takes me a long time to really understand a place. I've been to Zion, for example, a couple of times, and I still feel like I need to go back again and again before I can really start to photograph it in a way that's meaningful. It takes a lot of time, and sometimes I think you do just have to go out and get those iconic compositions out of your system. Just get it over with.
Like, right.
Go to tunnel view, do it. But when you go to tunnel view, then pop on a nice long lens, you know, to try something different, try to isolate part of, you know, what you're seeing. I do that all the time. Some of my favorite shots are from tunnel view, but they're not wide. They're just done tight, you know, of like maybe Bridal Veil Fall or part of El Capitan. You know, you can zero in on parts of that scene that are unique. Now, true, there's only going to be so many compositions you can do, but you have really, you know, amazing conditions that can happen up there. And it's always breathtaking. Always, always.
Yeah. And some of your best shots are of the waterfalls when they've got mist in front of them, or just the way the water is hitting the rocks and coming off. So mm-hmm. waiting to get some of those conditions possibly in a place like that too.
Well, like I said before, you have to basically, you know, read the conditions and figure out where to be. And sometimes you don't know, you just take your best guess. There's so many wonderful vantage points in Yosemite Valley, but when the weather's doing something interesting, you don't know where to go. I mean, you know, you do. I mean, you take a guess. It's like, well, it's going to be great here, but it might be even better there. So then you start, you know, trying to get yourself into a position. And sometimes there is no terrible place to be when the weather is doing interesting stuff. It's all good. You just have to pick. That's the hard part, is just deciding.
Right. You can't be everywhere.
No.
Yeah. Fear of missing out, or fear of missing something.
Yeah.
F8, the photographer's perspective, is brought to you by Out of Chicago. Out of Chicago brings together passionate enthusiasts with world-class photographers all in one epic location where you learn and shoot side-by-side with the pros. Since 2014, we've organized hands-on photography conferences in Chicago, New York City, Moab, and more. We are all photographers ourselves, so we understand what it takes to be inspired, get to the right place at the right time, and live our best creative life. You mentioned that during fall, which we have coming up, or we're in the middle of here, depending on where you are for fall color, that's one of your favorite times and that's what you look for. Can you give people a couple of tips for photographing fall color around them?
Yeah. You know, look for interesting light. For example, you know, I always use, you know, backlight or side light, avoid front light. I think that's a really common beginner mistake, is you get so excited by these beautiful colors. You take a picture of it and you end up with just like this big kind of colorful blob, because front light is very flat light. So try to get the light behind the trees or the leaves or on the side to make it more interesting. And also, you hear me say it all the time, watch your red channel, because what happens is a lot of it's really easy to overexpose and not realize that you've done that until you get back home in the digital darkroom and you realize you've blown out all those beautiful yellows, have no detail in them because you've blown out your red channel. And what that means is that it might look like the image is exposed properly, but always look at your histogram and check your red channel, because chances are it's going to be blown out, and you want to just bring your exposure down until it's not pushed up against the right side of the histogram. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. Yeah. Like, how do you set up your camera to see that? Did you just say check it when you get home?
I said that sometimes if you make the mistake and you don't check it till you get home, it's too late. You want to check it in the field. And most cameras have a way to check that, you know, either in live view or after you've taken the picture, to go ahead and, you know, look at the histogram and check it then and make sure you've exposed properly. It's really easy to fix it in the field. Impossible to fix it at home once you've made the mistake.
So you'll keep your histogram in that mode where it'll show red, green, and blue separately then?
Yes, I do.
And is that part of like when you play back every photo that shows up with it? Like that always annoys me. I want to see my photos as big as possible and then click into them to see the histogram. But I don't know. Everyone does it differently. How do you set yours up?
Well, I go back and forth. You know, once I'm pretty confident and I've got the exposure set, I don't want to be looking at the histogram every time. Then I'll turn it off, you know. And so now I'm exposing with pretty much confidence. I know what I'm doing. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I don't like to see all the information. Once I'm confident about my exposure, now I'm just focusing on composition and I don't want the clutter of all that information on my screen. But right. That's me, you know, that's me.
Well, it's like you said before, you know, you said that it's all about composition. I mean, once you master your camera kind of and have those things figured out, the only really, really difficult thing is, well, getting to places and then getting that right composition. So I try and put all my brain cells to that once the rest of it's figured out. Yeah, that sounds kind of similar.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Ideally, you have the camera like the back of your hands. You know how to operate it really, really well, and then you don't have to think about it. You know, these are, you know, a different part of your creative experience takes over, and you're not thinking about the technical part anymore. I mean, you do need to make sure you do things properly, but at the same time, you don't want to be encumbered by all that technical stuff because it can really thwart your creative process. So practice, practice, practice. Even in your backyard, you know, just get used to your camera. Take a lot of bad pictures. Don't worry about taking great pictures. Just get that camera in your hands on a regular basis and practice so that you don't, when you are faced with like phenomenal conditions and things are changing fast, you're not having problems with your gear. You know, you're confident about what you're doing.
I'm so surprised by how many people come to our events and they're like, well, I shot last year at your conference and I haven't shot again since then. And or someone comes and they don't know how to adjust their tripod or the whole thing is wobbly. And it's like, how are you going to concentrate on getting that great image when you're worried about your tripod and worried about, oh, what, you know, am I in the right camera settings and all that? So you got to get that first and practice, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, Chris, I practice. I mean, sometimes I don't get out in the field for a couple months at a time because I'm busy with work or whatever. And, you know, but I still get my camera in my hands so that I'm, you know, even though I've been using the same Canon 5DSR for years now, I still get that camera in my hands just so, you know, I can operate it with my eyes closed if I have to. So.
Right, right. I may be borrowing a new camera. Thank you, Gary from Hunt's Photo. No, go ahead. Okay. What were you
saying? Well, I got the. Do you have a new camera there?
I do. It's right here. It's the A7 R4 Sony. Mm, yeah.
Nice, yummy.
But yeah, it just came in the mail yesterday. I'm just borrowing it. So anyone that's like, what?
Sure.
I'm just borrowing it. But I like what I do is I just like lay in bed at night and I just like go through every single menu. I go through every and just make sure I got it down and that I know exactly how to run the thing. So
that's so important. And the other thing is that when you're like, when I teach workshops and things, I have to be able to not only know how to use my own camera, but I have to figure out how to use other people's cameras too. And sometimes someone has the newest, latest thing that I haven't run across yet. And, you know, that can be really challenging. So, you know, just understanding, you know, how your own camera works, you know, makes it really easy that when the next upgrade comes to your camera, that you're really familiar with at least the principle of how the cameras are supposed to work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know where, I know like, you're not doing the Oregon when you're doing the Yosemite. I've got too many events going on. This weekend we start out of Oregon, but we're going to try and do something. Maybe we'll do it in Yosemite as well, where when the people first come, we're going to have our photographers spread out. This is a secret, they're all going to be helping with different things. So we're going to have a couple of people that shoot Nikon and can help everyone make sure that they're all good with their Nikon settings. We're going to have people making sure, yes, your tripods are good and aren't about to fall over. Oh, sorry to bring that up again. and things like that to just kind of make sure everyone's ready to go that first night before we head out. So maybe we'll do something like that in Yosemite too.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I just just know so many times, or silly things like when I've done workshops before, just tagging along with other people on workshops, and they're like, could you help me out with these settings? And I'm going through their menus, and it's on like the second to last day of the workshop. I'm like, you've been shooting in JPEG the whole time. They're like, no, I would never shoot in JPEG. Well, you are, you know, things like that. So yeah so we'll try and get that straightened out. Let's see. One of the things I picked up from this interview that I really like is you said you are a big and strong girl, and you see in telephoto, you sound like a superhero. I love it. So,
I'm not.
No, I think you are.
That's the way I see myself, and there's the way like my husband sees me. And I he sees me as like a like weak little kitten, and I see myself as this like very strong, capable person that can handle anything that comes at me, but he just laughs at me. So,
No, I agree with you.
Somewhere in between.
The photography superhero. All right. Okay. So this is a weird one. I'm going to keep asking you things. I hope you don't mind. This is like a crazy exercise. Think of, I just came up with this. This might be a terrible idea. Might edit this whole thing out. Think of 20 of your favorite photos that you took. Envision them in your mind. You got them?
Yeah. I don't know if I have 20, but I can, you know,
you got them.
Yes. I mean, I can't think that many things ahead of time, but maybe not 20.
Are there any of them that don't have trees in them?
Hey.
Well, no. I mean, you are a master at photographing trees, and I'm thinking all of my favorite photos of yours.
What are you saying here?
It was going to lead into something else. I'm trying to say that you are amazing at photographing trees, and you've got to have some tips to go along with it. But to me, here's the thing that always happens to me. Is that I picture like an Ansel Adams photo with the birch trees, and it's like, wow, that is really a cool photo. And then I go out in the trees, and it's just like, it just looks like three trees. It's not even like a photograph. Like, how is it that you take just trees and turn it into like a masterpiece? Like, what is your secret, Charlotte?
Oh, that's very kind of you to say so. I don't know if there's a secret. I don't know. It's just how I see things. I try to describe, I kind of go back and say, okay, what's my process and how am I doing this? And it's really kind of, I mean, maybe it's my, you know, lens that dropped, you know,
maybe. I'm going to go drop mine. Yeah.
you know, I guess I just know how I want things to look. When I look at a grove of trees, I see something really beautiful. And then I try to take a visual inventory. What do I really like about what I'm seeing here? And then when I try to remember that, because when you get home and you're looking at a picture that you took of these trees, oftentimes it doesn't look like how you remembered it looking. So then I try to get it back to how I remembered it looking through processing. Sometimes like some of my images, like Aspen Happy, almost straight out of the camera. It was breathtakingly beautiful the way the light was, and the clouds were kind of going over, and they were, which meant it was killing the dappled lights in the foreground, but the aspens in the way background were lit up. So it was creating this really amazing visual color effect. Practically no processing on that image. But other times I'll get back and go, gosh, it didn't look like that to me. That's not how I remembered it looking. So then I try to bring it back to how my mind's eye saw it. And that can lead to like really good work. It could lead to really terrible work. There's been times when I've worked on an image that I thought was a fail, and I've gone back to it later, long after my mind's eye has forgotten what it really looked like, and I've come up with something completely different, you know? So it's, I don't know what I do, Chris. I just see things that way.
What are the biggest changes you make in post-processing that might make it look more like how you remembered? Is it exposure? Is it saturation? Is it cropping? What's the biggest thing?
I don't tend to crop a lot unless I made some terrible mistake in the field. I try to.
Oh yeah. We were talking about my mistakes earlier. Uh-huh. Keep going.
So generally I try to get it as full frame as I can. I try to make sure in the field I've gone wide enough in case I need to, you know, to go in or do something, but I generally try to go as full frame as possible. But the number one thing I do is just like back to my darkroom days, which is dodging and burning. You know, that's essentially mostly what I do. In terms of saturation, if anything, I pull back on the saturation, and then I might go in and do targeted saturation for certain parts of the picture that I want to bring out. So if I want the eye to move through the composition in a certain way, and there's something that's really saturated over in the corner, I might desaturate that because it's pulling your eye right out of the composition. So I had mentioned earlier that composition rules. And in other words, composition is king. You know, composition eats subject for breakfast. I'm sorry, it does. Because, you know, even, you know, I mean, really, I mean, trees, these are just trees, right? I mean, what makes them special? They're just trees. Well, it's composition. You know, it's composition. It's how you're leading the eye through the composition. And how do you do that? Well, you do it through dodging and burning and very strict control of color. So they're just trees, right?
Yes, but you make them amazing. I don't know what you do. All right, so here's another exercise. You ready? Another crazy exercise. This might have to do with composition as king. I'm not sure. Or composition beats subject. I'm not sure. If you had the choice of having 2 hours to wander the woods and find the best set of trees for your shot and then 2 minutes to take it, would you take that? Or would you rather have 2 minutes to find the right set of trees and then 2 hours to shoot it? Was that a good question? That's a really good question, right?
Oh, boy. I think I would tend to use the time wandering and then shoot.
Even though you'd have to shoot quickly. I know normally that's not your style, is you'd want to spend time doing both, right?
But yeah, ideally. But honestly, sometimes, you know, the wandering is the best part, you know, because that's the part that you start to grok what you're in. Like if you're in a forest, you know, you really need to feel what that forest is like. And it takes a while for the clutter to kind of go away in your mind's eye. I mean, forests are messy, you know, they're not.
I know, that's why it's so hard to shoot. Yes.
Yeah, they are not tidy places at all. And so, you know, a lot of the time is spent is just wandering, trying to figure out like how to find a composition where there's not something distracting in the frame. And that takes a while, you know, unless you really like want to spend all your time in Photoshop and cloning and stuff. So it's much, much better to try to get a clean in the field if you can.
Yeah, for sure. So, I wanted to ask you this earlier when you were talking about zooming in on things that you know, if you want to find something different, you zoom in tighter, you shoot with like the 70 to 200. Have you ever, and I don't think from your photos, I don't think it shows, have you ever said, well, I want to go even further than that and done a lot of macro work, or is that just not really your thing?
It's not really my thing yet. And I never want to rule things out because like, this is what I'm doing right now, but I'm also starting to experiment with some other techniques and ideas. I'm wanting to go more kind of in a conceptual type of work as opposed to, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going as an artist.
Tell us, explain. I want to hear more about this.
Well, I'm getting to that point where, do you ever get bored with your own work?
Yeah. Well, usually it's other people getting bored with my work, but that's okay.
Uh-huh. Well, when I start getting bored with my own work, I know that something is about to happen creatively. And that's what's been happening to me lately is I've been getting, you know, kind of bored. And so what I want to start working on are just more specific conceptual projects, things that that tie a group of images together as opposed to one-offs, you know, things that that have a story, that tell a visual story together as a group of images. So that's kind of where I'm going. I've done a little, if you go on my website, you can see under projects, a few things that I'm working on there. One of them is called Human Nature. And I actually have some people in my shots, which I don't typically do. So when you ask me about macro, I don't want to say, no, I'm not interested in that. It's just, I haven't done it yet. I've played around with it and it's highly technical. It's, you know, it's a lot of focus stacking, for example, to get everything in focus. And
it could be, I need to introduce you to Ann Belmont. Oh, you know, Ann Belmont. Yes,
I haven't met Anne, but yeah, she and I both write for Visual Wilderness.
So, yes, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, she doesn't do focus stacking. She's like, bah, focus stacking. And she's not technical I would say she's not technical at all. That sounds like a slam, but we love you, Anne. But she goes about it the same way you are. She just happens to be using a macro lens and is a lot closer to things. But she could be an inspiration.
Yeah, it's something that I'll probably dive into, but it's one of those areas that I think that if you're going to be good at anything, it's really, you've got to spend a lot of time doing it. And macro is one of those things that my attempts just were feeble. I mean, they just looked terrible. So I kind of am sort of sticking to this other thing that I really like doing, but it's not to say that I won't jump into it at some point and try it. You know, who's also really into that is Sarah Marino, does lovely macro work. Really,
I
nice
tried to have Sarah Marino come to Yosemite, but she was busy.
Sad. The thing is, the other person that I was going to mention who is coming is Colleen, mm-hmm. and her work is amazing. Her macro work. So, in fact, a lot of what I learned about macro was from Colleen. So you've got someone on your team there who's going to be able to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not worried.
It's just not going to be me, Chris.
Oh, fine. Not yet.
Not yet.
I like that. All right. Well, fabulous. So where do people want to go to see your photographs, to follow you, to read? You're talking about articles that you're writing, whether it's for Visual Wilderness or your own blog. Where do people go to find you?
Well, the easiest place to find me is my own website, www.charlottegibb.com. Shocking, I know. My blog is, you can find my blog off of that main website. It's a different website. It's charlottegibblog.com. And, you know, I basically on my blog, I try to write about experiences and creativity and new work. I tend to throw my technical work over to Visual Wilderness because I think they have an audience of people who are more interested in that kind of writing. And then I also write for Nature Photographers Network. And I try to write on the subject of creativity for those folks over there. But if you go to my website, all those things are linked from there. So you can find me from that place.
Yeah.
So, and I have a newsletter, you can sign up there too. So I don't send out tons of stuff. Maybe once a month I send out a newsletter with what's going on, and that's about it.
Yeah. And I know if you just Google Charlotte Gibb, that all that stuff comes up. So, all right. Anything else you want to say?
You know what? We have to save something for the conference, Chris, because otherwise we won't have anything to talk about until there. But I am super excited about coming to the conference and, you know, teaching all these eager students who are going to be very excited to be in Yosemite. And I'm very eager to share my enthusiasm about my very favorite place on this planet.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really honored to be invited to present there and to teach. It's going to be a blast. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great. All right. Thank you so much, Charlotte. We will talk soon. We'll see you in February at least.
Yep.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheerio.
F8, The Photographer's Perspective is hosted by me, Chris Smith, and produced by Out of Chicago. A special thanks to all photographers that share their inside knowledge to make this possible. We release a new episode each week, so be sure to subscribe to the show wherever podcasts are found. To learn more about Out of Chicago and upcoming events, go to outofchicago.com. Subscribe to our mailing list to stay connected and be the first to know of our next new location where you can shoot side by side with the pros.